You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Locked On Vikings. I am your host, your pal, and the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. The show's on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. This show is available anywhere you find your favorite podcasts, including asking your smart device to play podcast Locked On Vikings. And of course, this podcast is brought to you by Built Bar, the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and enter promo code Locked On at checkout, and you can get $10 off of your first order. And there has been a developing story in NFL news, and I will tie it back to the Vikings, but this is going to be a bit more of a league-wide kind of episode. And it involves Colin Kaepernick, whose message, I would say, has gotten kind of relevant. And so it isn't surprising that a lot of journos and people looking to make content are starting to unearth some of the goings-on that happened during 2016, 2017, 2018, when Colin Kaepernick was kind of at the heat of the media focal point, if that's the sentence. And I want to start with kind of the reason that he's back in the news outside of the obvious, like, contextual mentions of, hey, you know, this is what Colin Kaepernick was protesting and he was doing it peacefully and now it's not so peaceful and blah, blah, blah. But more so that Joe Lockhart, who was once the executive vice president of communications for the NFL, very high ranking person with a lot of access to teams and what they were thinking, wrote a column for CNN where he basically spills the beans and says, you know, this is how teams saw Colin Kaepernick. They saw him as bad for business, and the kind of rhetoric that you would expect, the Occam's razor thing, turns out to be the truth all along. Teams saw him as somebody that would get people too riled up, would generate too much controversy, would potentially scare advertisers and other business deals away, and they didn't think it was worth it for somebody that they saw as a backup quality player. Now, of course, there's a million things wrong with this, right? But I imagine that there are some of you out there who this is news to you. I have seen plenty of discussions to this day where people still believe, no, it's because he wasn't good enough. It's because, you know, teams didn't think he was good enough. It had nothing to do with the off-field stuff. They were maybe worried he'd be a little bit of a headache, but he wouldn't take enough money and teams wouldn't sign him and never thought he was worth it. And it's just a hard line. There it is. End of story. And I would venture that the Joe Lockhart column is proof against that. After all, we have seen plenty of quarterbacks make a roster who are inarguably worse than Colin Kaepernick. Now, 3 years removed from the league, obviously there's a lot of question marks about what you would actually get, but you could probably venture a guess that it's better than what you would get from, like, Sean Mannion on the field. And I know that that's not a particularly controversial statement, because in mailbags and in comments and in DMs and stuff, a lot of people have, I swear I've gotten this maybe half a dozen times since Sean Mannion was signed, have been like, hey, do you think the Vikings should go after Colin Kaepernick so they can improve on Sean Mannion? And I never really see people, like, argue against that if someone says it out loud. But I mean, shoot, pick your poison of, like, terrible quarterback seasons, right? Pick your DeShone Kizer season, pick your Connor Cook and Brock Osweiler type disasters. I don't think you could go up and down the league from 2017, I think was the year that the blackballing first began, all the way through 2018, 2019. I don't think you can go all the way up and down those 3 years and find a team that wouldn't have been inarguably improved on the field by Colin Kaepernick. So it can't be 100% about that. Now, I don't know the full story of if somebody offered him backup money, hey, you know, come play for us for $2 million and be a backup, and he said, no, I want starter money, and he's just, like, being stubborn about that. That's probably a different thing, and I also don't know the truth of that kind of thing, but I also don't think it's particularly relevant because of this column by Joe Lockhart. It wasn't about the cap space, according to him. It was about losing season ticket holders and generally losing revenue because they thought that they would lose the support of their fans who hated the guy. So contract negotiation impasses be damned, it really doesn't seem like it was about that. And again, I would argue that should you be willing to hear it, the evidence for that, like, wasn't very difficult to find at the time. You, again, had worse quarterbacks signing for bigger deals. You had teams in desperate bidding wars. You had fan bases advocating that you should tank an entire season just to get a quarterback that's halfway decent. Teams like Miami actually trying that and not even doing it right. And so I guess the point that I want to make here in this first part of the Kaepernick thing is if you were wrong about this, that's completely okay. if you were one of those people that thought, no, it is entirely an on-field thing. It's all about salary level and level of play, and nobody wants him to be a backup, and the media circus is nothing. I mean, after all, you know, the Bills traded for Stephon Diggs right after putting up a whole stink, and they almost traded for Antonio Brown, and the Raiders did, and the Patriots picked him up, you know, during all that. You know, a headache of a media circus is not necessarily something that teams shy away from when they like the player on the field, and so it must be about, his on-field ability, which has declined since the Super Bowl year of 2012 and all of that eliteness. And if you're one of those people that dug in your heels no matter what was presented to you, this part is for you, because it's different now. A very, very credible source directly, not like through a reporter mouthpiece or anything directly, put a column on a big website with his name on it that said, no, it was about the thing everybody thought it was about. And so I guess I would just ask, if you were somebody who was vehemently anti-Kaepernick and thought the league was, you know, just doing its thing and he just isn't a good enough quarterback, I want you to really think about why you were so militant about that, and really look inwardly on how much evidence you saw that you ignored that made sense. And sometimes it makes sense to ignore evidence, right? If somebody tells me how many touchdowns a guy got in you know, primetime games, I am going to ignore that evidence. It's good evidence to ignore. But I think if you're honest with yourself and really look at how you came to the opinion you came to, I have a theory. I think a lot of people knew that Colin Kaepernick was being blackballed. And I think a lot of people didn't want to admit that he was being blackballed because that would tacitly admit that the NFL had a very unpopular opinion about police brutality and that they were supporting a very unpopular opinion of police brutality. And lest you be on the unpopular side, it's much easier to talk yourself into, well, actually, he wasn't that good, and he's, look at all the interceptions he threw in 2016, and he got benched, and blah, 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 blah. So if that was you, if you were in that place, if you weren't in this place, and you just kind of thought, oh, no, he is being blackballed, but he should be, because I don't think you should protest that way, or whatever, that's fine. I disagree with you, but that's okay. I'm really talking to people who dug in on it being about Kaepernick on the field. It very clearly was not. It always clearly was not. And if you ignored the heaps of evidence to that end, I think this is a really good opportunity for you to look inward and become a better analyzer of evidence. And if you ask me, a guy who is wrong plenty of the time, go listen to some of the summer shows, I tend to think being wrong is okay, as long as you find a way to become better at whatever it is you were wrong about. I think that's the best way to become better, right? Fail before you can succeed. But there's another angle with Colin Kaepernick I want to talk about. There was an article in the Star Tribune, and there is a little bit of some murmurings that some people want the Vikings to sign Colin Kaepernick because, of course, they are at the epicenter of the George Floyd protests because it happened in Minneapolis. And I mean, there are protests outside of US Bank Stadium like every night now. And so for symbolic reasons, some people say, hey, this would be a great thing for the Vikings to do to show solidarity and potentially try to put an end to some of this madness. And I want to explore that idea when we come back. But first, I want to talk to you about Built Bar. Built Bar is the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. But I, you know, when I say that, I always then back off it and say, it's not as sweet as like a Snickers bar. It's something that I can eat in the morning and not feel sick, you know, or after a workout or something, or as a treat before bed that is tasty as a Snickers bar, but it doesn't have all the sugar and all of the calories and all of the nasty stuff that makes you feel all weird and get a rush and get a weird headache. I compare it to like a Clif bar, and it's a lot more like richly flavorful without just punching you in the face with sugar. And it comes in a bunch of really fun flavors like chocolate raspberry, double fudge brownie, toffee almond, all kinds of fun stuff. And if you want to get in on that, you can go to builtbar.com. And when you do your first order, you can enter promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get $10 off of that order. So that's builtbar.com, promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off of your first order. So on Monday, Jim Suhan of the Star Tribune published a piece titled "A Strong Statement is Needed and the Vikings Signing Colin Kaepernick Would Do It." I will link that as well as the Joe Lockhart piece that I was talking about in the show notes below. Strongly recommend reading both of those. And in the piece, he makes that case. He makes the case why the Vikings should sign Colin Kaepernick. It's both an on-field and off-field justification, and so I kind of want to go over those points and their merit. So we'll start with the on-field one because I think that one's a little bit easier to parse. And Lord knows we just want to talk about football. So let's do that for a second. So obviously, I mean, I alluded to it earlier, but I don't think it would be controversial to say that on the field, if it were like a training camp battle, Colin Kaepernick would beat out Sean Mannion, and I think even 3 years removed, he's got a pretty good shot. And at the very least, you would want to have that battle for the backup spot, right? That would really ensure a better level of play the same way competition always does. You're going to hear this from me a lot, but players represent a range of outcomes, right? Take one of the less sure, Mike Hughes, right? Mike Hughes is a player that there's a little uncertainty around, right? The best outcome is that he's a total superstar corner. The worst outcome is that he sucks and he has to start because nobody else is good. We, at this point, cannot know for sure which it's going to be. We can look at evidence, we can make predictions, but we can't know. And I think that Colin Kaepernick would have the same thing, right? There's a chance that he's completely washed, being 3 years out of football, has completely destroyed his ability, and there's no way he can even be NFL caliber. And in that case, you're back to where you were if you would have never done it anyways. You just have Sean Mannion and you had a weird training camp. Not a huge deal, but if he's better, then you've improved upon Sean Mannion. That's great, right? Like, worst case scenario is Sean Mannion, and best case scenario is better than Sean Mannion. So what's not to like? I think that makes plenty of sense. Now, I've mentioned this before about Sean Mannion, and this is why the Vikings aren't going to do it. And it's because they are happier than you with Sean Mannion as a backup quarterback. And the reason is, as a whiteboard guy, and I know the typical response to this is, well, why don't you just hire him as a coach? And the answer, I think, is that Sean Mannion wouldn't do that. You get paid quite a bit less to be like an assistant quarterback's coach. And I'm sure he's not going to be like coerced into retiring so easily. So if you want his brain in the room, and if his brain in the room, if we can agree that his brain in the room makes Kirk Cousins, you know, turn from an 85 into an 89, to use a Madden rating, I think we can understand that, like, okay, that's worth having a slightly less reliable insurance policy for if Kirk Cousins, who has not been injured in quite a while, gets injured. Now, you could definitely present a case that it's not worth that, but that's the paradigm that we're looking at this through, right? This isn't some weird delusion about how good Sean Mannion is on the field. I think the Vikings have made that clear that they are not delusional about how Sean Mannion is on the field. They are retaining him because he provides extra value, and then having guys like Nate Stanley and Jake Browning develop in the background, and maybe one of them catches on. And so Colin Kaepernick would have to be quite a bit better than Sean Mannion to upset that balance. He would not have that familiarity and that ability that seems like it's actually kind of unique to Sean Mannion. You know, you bring in somebody else and Sean Mannion is going to have that advantage over them. And so that just increases the margin by which Kaepernick would have to beat him to win the job. Not saying that it's impossible, just saying it's that much harder. And of course, you got to figure out the money, but I don't think that's going to be particularly difficult. The Vikings are working with like a functional like $8 million in cap space right now. They probably have some offers on the table for guys like Everson Griffin or like Darquise Dennard or whatever. And so you'd kind of have to weigh out those options. But the other one, and this is the interesting one, the other side of Suhan's argument is the community one. For one, it would send a really important message. And we kind of then have to ask the question, what is the role of an NFL team when something like this is happening? And when I say something like this, I mean a huge nationwide crisis that is directly tied to race. And race is something that has been intrinsically linked to all sports, especially the NFL, for pretty much ever. And so I would argue that NFL teams have quite a bit of responsibility to be leaders in their community. I mean, we expect players to be leader in their community during times of peace. We expect players, or we at least congratulate them when they do work at children's hospitals, do what Kyle Rudolph does, what Dalvin Cook does. And so I think those roles come with a responsibility to be active at this point. So yeah, I do think that teams have a responsibility to make that kind of statement. And the Vikings, I believe, were the first NFL team to put out a statement about George Floyd's death. Plenty of Vikings players have made statements. I think they've been very active, and I do believe that they've been like rising up to that duty more on the player level. The actual team just kind of like put out one press release and that's it. Maybe you expect more from them. That's fine. But this kind of move would be a really unprecedented thing, and it would send quite the message. Now, I don't think it's better for the Vikings because of the reasons I laid out on the field to do this for Colin Kaepernick. So to do this to make a community statement, you would have to basically be saying we are sacrificing our on-field ability by way of cap space and preparation and all that stuff. And perhaps that's what makes the statement so powerful, is we are sacrificing our on-field ability to make a statement to our community. And now here's the reconciliatory part. I think you can do that same thing by signing Colin Kaepernick, bringing him into training camp, and then he doesn't make the team. And I don't think it would be too difficult to sell, oh, you know, yeah, he wasn't good enough in practice or whatever. I mean, hey, if he plays well on the field, then, you know, that's a win-win, right? You got a good player at quarterback. But let's assume the worst. Let's be the most pessimistic about Colin Kaepernick as we possibly can and say he's totally not rosterable anymore. I don't think that's too hard to believe, being out of the league for 3 years. If he is signed today, he comes into training camp and gets cut on cut day, I think that sends a phenomenal message to the community. You're not under any obligation to roster him. Signing him and giving him the chance in the first place and putting him in a football uniform, I think that sends the message. I mean, shoot, you could do a one-day contract just for the symbolism of it. It would be a bit of a weaker message, but it would still be something kind of interesting. And, you know, like I mentioned, the nice thing about competition, because people represent a range of outcomes, is that it doesn't necessarily mean that you're getting worse on the field, right? If he can't play, he can't play, he gets cut, that's life. But let's prove that, right? Let's go see. Let's run the experiment instead of coming to that assumption. Because if we're wrong, and he is good, I think we would want to put ourselves in a situation where being wrong rewards us by giving us a better backup quarterback or whatever. Now, again, you have to make sure that the salary cap works and that the money actually adds up and you're not making huge sacrifices just to have like a ceremonial quarterback competition. But considering that Minneapolis, Minnesota is the epicenter of all of this, it is ground zero, it is where George Floyd lost his life, I think a symbolic gesture would be a good move. I don't think we can necessitate that the Vikings do it our way, because again, the players have been very active, the Vikings put out a statement very quickly, they have done something, they haven't just been sitting on their hands and being silent. I would say if you're going to vilify somebody for that, turn to the NFL and Roger Goodell. But if the Vikings made a move like that and stepped out of the shadows into the sunlight and really made a voice heard by acting instead of speaking, I would be the first to line up and support them in that. So now for the rest of the show, I'm going to transition into something a little bit more football-y. I don't think it's particularly the right thing to do to create only a distraction, which is why I'm trying to talk about things that are relevant and topical. But I do think that it is also good for all of our mental health to take our mind off it for, you know, 8-9 minutes while I tell the story of Mark Fields, who is going to be on the docket for today. We're going to tell his story, how he ended up on the Vikings in the NFL, and his is kind of a roller coaster, so buckle up for that. It's coming up when we come back. Every once in a while, you'll see a player get really, really hyped in the high school recruiting circuit. Somebody who gets offers, in this case, from LSU and Ohio State, ends up at Clemson, five-star guy that everybody's really excited about. And for whatever reason, it never comes together. And it's difficult to speculate on why. Sometimes it's injury, sometimes it's just work ethic, sometimes it just don't transition to the higher octane environment that is, you know, college versus high school. Sometimes they're guys who are so athletic that they learn to rely on it instead of, you know, learning proper technique. And then at the college level, you know, they get beat on that. And honestly, the same thing kind of happens with, you know, college to the NFL too. You know, somebody will get drafted third overall and be, you know, this blue chip superstar everybody thinks is going to be perfect, and then 2 years later you're like, oh my god, it's Matt Khalil. But for whatever reason, those transitions are really difficult. And in the case of Mark Fields, it's one that he never really got to make. So Mark Fields, North Carolina, and he was an absolute superstar when it came to his high school pedigree. And so, like I said, he gets offers from all of the big schools, OSU, LSU, all the way down to Texas and South Carolina, and he ends up going to Clemson to follow in the footsteps of guys like Mackenzie Alexander and Jayron Kearse, who would get drafted after his first year there. So he shows up and he's behind those guys. That's fine. That's pretty normal. And when it comes to his sophomore year, he has a chance to win a starting job there against a guy named Trayvon Mullen, who you may have heard of. Trayvon Mullen ends up beating Mark Fields out for that job, despite being having a disadvantage of 1 year of college experience. He's a fresh recruit, and he ends up winning the job. A little later, then you see him lose a job to AJ Terrell, who just went in the first round this year. And so for most of Mark Fields' career at Clemson, he was behind these two guys as they were younger than him and beating him out for jobs. So come his junior year, there's this narrative about him where he's just this guy that never lived up to potential. And now he is kind of in the category as all the other guys that I talked about just a second ago. And it's really a moment where he has to prove himself. Now, before each of his years at Clemson, you can pretty much find the cliche article where he says he's attacking it with a completely new mentality and everything changed and this is the year where he's going to put it all together. And then freshman year, sophomore year, he never quite puts it all together. So when his junior year comes out and you hear the same thing, oh, this time I've changed, I'm taking it seriously now, I'm taking my technique seriously. And he does talk a lot about how he was such a good athlete, such a dynamic athlete, that he would rely on that and not technique, and that would get him beat all the time. And he says, well, now, I'm starting to learn technique and I'm starting to take it seriously and approach the game the right way. And, every Clemson fan kind of rolls their eyes and says, yeah, all right. Show me on the field. And his junior year, he starts showing you on the field. He actually starts to get in games. He starts to play a little better. Of course, it's rotational just because Clemson has a million good defensive backs, and that's what they're known for, but Mark Fields is still getting his time and earning it and playing a lot better. And then, of course, these things seem to always hit at the worst time. He gets hurt, and all of that momentum is completely sapped from him. He misses some time because of a groin injury, another, undisclosed injury. There is a foot injury that he suffers in one of the national championships, and he never can quite stay on the field. He even misses a game for one of those, super murky team rules violations that nobody will ever tell you about. So he ends up missing a whole bunch of time and slowing down his whole college career. And he never quite puts it together. Even his senior year, he's still getting beat out by AJ Terrell. And, he kind of redeems himself a little bit in his final game, which is ends up being the national championship against Alabama in 2018. But he still doesn't quite put it together in the way that he was, such a dynamic high school recruit, one of the best players in the nation, and all the big schools were fighting over him. And he ends up not really being able to crack a starting lineup throughout the entirety of his time. And it's at Clemson, but still, he probably should have looked like he belonged at Clemson. So, needless to say, it's a fairly disappointing college career for him, and that leads to a guy that probably could, raw but athletically talented cornerbacks get drafted high all the time. Like Noah Igbinoghene was one. I think Garyon Conley was one, if I remember. Those guys go high all the time. So guys like Mark Field, with that sort of style where it's, he's got to learn everything and he's super raw because he didn't get enough time, playing in college, but he's super athletic and we can work with that. Like coaches will kind of be excited and want that, but for whatever reason, they don't want it with Mark Fields. And perhaps everybody talked to Dabo Swinney and said, hey, does this kid have the work ethic? And he went, it was spotty and up and down, and you kind of avoid that. But he falls all the way out of the draft. He ends up being an undrafted free agent. He gets invited to Kansas City Chiefs training camp, and he tries to make the team there. And things were actually going okay for him throughout the first three preseason games. And then game four comes. And game four of the preseason is one of my favorite moments of the season. I actually enjoy it sometimes more than a lot of regular season games because there is so much at stake for everybody on the field. These kids are playing that fourth preseason game like it is the BCS National Championship. It's incredible to watch. If you understand the stories and what they're fighting for and where they came from, a lot of those guys, that's the last time they're going to play football professionally in their career. And a lot of those guys are playing with the stakes of, if I don't play well enough, this is the last time I play football in my career. So they play their absolute hearts out. And I really, really love the fourth week of the preseason just because of that. It kind of becomes less about, who's going to win, who's going to lose. I'm not watching any of the starters or any of the exciting players whose jerseys I'm going to buy, but I can at least appreciate that these guys are fighting for their lives out there. And Mark Fields, in the fourth preseason game, I believe it was against the Green Bay Packers, puts up the worst game of his life. He gets absolutely drummed, he blows coverages, he gets a bunch of touchdowns, caught in his, he loses contested catches, and ask any Packers fan who was paying attention, who pays attention to the fourth preseason game, and they'll tell you, oh my god, yeah, he was horrible, and the Chiefs are getting ready to cut him and see what happens. But because he's such an athlete, and again, all these coaches kind of always think, there's no reason if I get him on my practice squad, I would love to get him, in my building and see what my coaches can do with them. So a bunch of teams were going to have a practice squad bidding war, and the Vikings just had a bunch of cornerback problems with their depth. They were going to cut B'nai Ben-Wickery, who was supposed to be the depth. They were dealing with some injuries. Mike Hughes was still hurt from the ACL injury he suffered in 2018, and there was also an injury suffered by his old friend, Mackenzie Alexander. So the Vikings actually pony up a conditional seventh round pick for Mark Fields. If Fields were to stay on the roster for like 4 weeks, I think it was, they would give a seventh round pick to the Chiefs. So Fields is on the roster, on the 53-man roster for a little while. All that bidding war kind of dies down. Everybody fills out their practice squads. And I think a week or two goes by, Mackenzie Alexander is back pretty quick, and Mike Hughes is back as well. And so before that deadline is up, the Vikings end up cutting Mark Fields to save themselves the draft pick, and they put him on the practice squad for the rest of the season, give him a futures contract, and now here he comes in 2019 or in 2020 to try and make the team again. And so this has been a bit of a ride, this last little moment for Mark Fields, somebody who really has just declined in terms of his momentum and his like career trajectory year after year after year. You know, he shows up to Clemson, he's going to be a star, and then he's a star, but maybe he just hasn't broken out yet, but he definitely will be. And then he's competing for a starting job, and then he's just got to show something, and then he's not making the team, and now he's probably kind of a long shot in this cornerback group to beat out guys even like the Chris Boyds and rookies like Cameron Dantzler and Harrison Hand. You know, beating them out for roster positioning is something that Mark Fields is going to struggle with, but he still has all that dynamic athleticism. He's an absolute like super athlete even at the NFL level, and so if he can figure it out, if he can come in with that mentality he says he has every year, he could be a sleeper and a dark horse. But it's something that we haven't seen in like 6 years of following Mark Fields. And so Mark Fields has to attack the preseason now with everything to prove. Those kind of guys are the ones that I love to watch in the fourth quarter of the fourth preseason game with everything on the line. And I think that's going to be Mark Fields this year. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Locked On Vikings. I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, you can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. This show is available anywhere you find your favorite podcasts, or you can always ask your smart device to play podcast Locked On Vikings. This episode is brought to you by Built Bar, the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and enter promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off of your first order. And as always, Skol.